Hello, a very warm welcome back. For those of you who have been following the series, you will know that we are somewhere in the middle of chapter 18, where Sister Denise and I are discussing this chapter, shloka by shloka, because it is the end of the Bhagavad Gita. So, Sister Denise, it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
We're stopped at verse 60, so I'd like to take up what's contained in verse 61. And the thought here goes on for a few stanzas where God says to Arjuna, "The Lord abides in the hearts of all beings, Arjuna, causing all beings to revolve by the power of illusion as if fixed on a machine. Fly unto Him alone for refuge with your whole being, Arjuna. From His grace you shall attain supreme peace and eternal abode."
I think that verse 61 is especially interesting because of this idea of the world moving, rotating like a machine. Everything is determined by karma and at the same time by destiny, and it's a revolving process. So what is causing us to be part of this is indeed very mysterious. The word mayaya is used, which can be translated as magic. So magic always is a word used to refer to something you don't understand. And it is very, very difficult to understand how we individuals are tied to the machinery of destiny and the machinery of karma. And then God is said to abide in the hearts. And when you have someone in your heart, it doesn't mean that they are literally in your heart, but that you are remembering them. Because you are thinking about someone, you will say, "That person is in my heart." And the love between a soul and God, the soul is in the heart of God, God is in the heart of the soul. But this refers to the relationship rather than fixed locations, I would say. Your place of existence is your love for God. Why things are the way they are is because of the great story of humanity of which we form a part. So it's a very deep shloka to meditate on, which gives us a bit of an idea as to what this all is. I love God, God loves me, but there's all of this machinery that maybe takes me away.
Sister Denise, from the words "fly unto Him alone for refuge with your whole being," it's not just a question of love, is it? I'm of the view that if you love somebody, you give them your time. And that is how you know, that is to me proof that you love somebody. The person that you love the most, you give most of your time to. And God is saying, that's what I understand if I read between the lines, give me your time and I will reciprocate your love. So it's not just a question of what you feel, it's what you do with what you feel.
And also in verse 62, it is talking about actually going somewhere. So you're flying to God for refuge, for protection against the magic, against the karmic accounts. What you're trying to achieve here is eternal liberation. So once again, we have this idea of the soul flying to God to dwell with God in the world of light, which is the final place of resting after having completed all the reincarnations in the cycle.
Mr. Denise, I see that verse 63 begins on another note. "Thus, the knowledge that is more secret than all that is secret has been expounded to you by me. Having reflected on this fully, do as you please." I cannot help but point out that this is totally at variance with that which is contained in verse 60. Okay. Yeah. You've got no choice. This is your destiny. Even if you think you won't, you will. However, do as you please. How, Sister Denise, can one understand this glaring irregularity? Well, what appears to me to be,
Well, it's the ultimate paradox, isn't it? And I think this is the question that people who subscribe to the different faith traditions everywhere also consider. Do we have free will, or are we tied by destiny? And here it says that you do have free will, and I think this is where it ties with verse 60. Your destiny is if you have ego, or your compulsion is if you have false ego. Here we're saying, have you understood the secret of all secrets? Because if you have, then you're free, and then you can act independently. So to me, this is probably one of the most extraordinary shlokas of the Gita, which really says, okay, as long as you have no ego and you've studied this fully and you are, you know, at a level that is like God, then you are free. You can be the master. So this is the most desirable condition. So it appears very near the end of the Gita. So I think probably one of the most interesting things to meditate on, you know, because you want freedom, right? It is one of the highest values. But you have to be able to be responsible if you have freedom. You cannot be responsible if you don't understand all the secrets. But once you understand everything, you become, for a moment at least, on the same level as God, and then you are truly free. So this, you know, may be considered as almost better than going off into eternal liberation. Because once you're in eternal liberation, you're a seed, you're not doing anything, you're just merged. But here, you're free. Pretty good.
Yeah, Sister Denise, the other way that I looked at it after I got over the shock of the contradiction is I thought God is showing Arjuna that he respects him and he respects his decision-making ability, because God wouldn't reveal all of this knowledge to an intellect that cannot hold it.
Right.
So he's saying, you choose. But because he's God, he already knows what his son will choose.
That's true.
Let's move on to verse 64. Hear again my supreme word, most secret of all. You are surely loved by me, therefore I shall speak for your good. There's an overwhelming sense of kindness in this verse, a heart verse.
Yes.
Very, very kind. And again, God literally coming down to a human level. He's saying that this entire conversation between us is my love for you.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah. And again, the aspect of yoga is taken up again in verse 65. Fix your mind on me, worshipping me, sacrificing to me, bowing down to me. In this way, you shall surely come truly to me. I promise, for you are dear to me.
And this you also find in 64. You are surely loved by me, therefore I shall speak for your own good. So whatever God is saying to Arjuna, to us, even though it is totally in contradiction with the conventional wisdom, it is God's love which is telling us, look, what I'm saying to you is so secret, people can hardly understand it because they're fixed in a different way of looking at things. But if you listen to me, you will arrive at the destination. And so it's really a very interesting statement that God's love for you actually frees you from the influence of the world, which wants you to be held in a particular box, if you will. And God is saying, no, you listen to me and you will arrive at absolute freedom. You will come to me, which is anyway the goal of human life, is to arrive at God. We depart from God, we come onto this earth, we pass through the pure, the middle stage, the impure, and we return to God. So the sattva, rajasic, and tamasic is all about passing through time, passing through the material world. And the material world traps us. And the materialistic mentality of people who are caught in ego also trap us, but God will free us, you know. So this is His love. Beautiful.
If one does not accept God's love, you cannot accept this knowledge, can you?
Well, no, because you're in between the love of God and the mentality of the world, which is materialistic. And if you are stuck in that, then you cannot take this. In the Ramayana, Ram always follows the dictates of the world, and this actually puts him into a tragic situation. Whereas here, Arjuna and God are saying to the world, you do whatever you want to do, but we are doing whatever we want to do. So you're really saying goodbye to the worldly world and hello to beauty, to freedom, to the unconstrained relationship between the soul and God, which takes you to the right destination. And so, of course, it takes a lot of courage for someone to go that road, but it shows that it can be done. And God gives you a promise. I promise, just do what I say and you will come to me. And don't listen to those other people, because this is so secret that they can't grasp it.
Let's now go to verse 66, which reads, abandoning all duties, take refuge in me alone. I shall liberate you from all evils. Do not grieve. You know what struck me? When Arjuna enters the battlefield, he's of the view that if he kills his relatives, he's creating karma. And the message that God gives him throughout the Bhagavad Gita is that once you do that, once you engage in this war, you won't be creating karma, you'll be settling it.
Well, he is saying that, and he's also saying something else. And that is, I think with verse 66, you know, take refuge in me alone, which is a very, very famous mantra. Mam ekam sharanam vraj, you know, take refuge in me alone. It means because I'm here, you no longer need to be under the influence of what humanity has devised as conventional wisdom or conventional morality, because God is above and beyond all that. And so he says, do not grieve, do not worry. Just do what I say and you will be free from evil, from bondage. And it even says you can let go of your duties, that is your caste duties. You're liberated from all of these constraints that conventional morality has placed people in the absence of God. Because the Gita is God takes a body, God arrives and speaks. And he speaks again. God has spoken before, is mentioned, and now he comes and speaks again. And so when he speaks again, it means it's newly given information. And so we can trust that. So if you recognize God and you love God, then trust that just following his directions will carry you to the state of freedom from evil, but you have to leave the worldly world.
Verse 67 takes up another train of thought where God is cautioning Arjuna as to who he should reveal this knowledge to. Why is that? You see, when God speaks, everyone should hear, because it's God who's speaking. Why is there this implicit warning?
There is a story which talks about humanity as being divided into devotees and devils. And you see, the knowledge from God is the nectar of immortality. So if this knowledge is given to one who is practicing all forms of pure action, you immortalize that. But if you give this knowledge to someone who is devilish, then you immortalize that. So that would be dangerous, because what you want is for anything extremely negative and so on to be neutralized. So you do not give the nectar of immortality to that. Another thing that we learn in the studies and practices of Raj Yoga with Brahma Kumaris is that only those who follow the disciplines and principles of purity have a right to listen to the knowledge. There is another example that is given. There's a story that says that the milk of a lioness must be held in a golden vessel.
Sure, and that's so, a very powerful image.
Well, yeah. So the golden vessel means the pure intellect. And the milk of a lioness is said to be the most powerful medicine there is. It's known as medicine. So this knowledge given by God is such, must be held in a golden vessel. Now, if you put this milk of a lioness in a vessel that is base metal, it will curdle. So what this means is that if you give this knowledge to somebody who is oriented in a tamasic manner, they will take this knowledge and turn it around. And I think that, you know, we can make a reference to Hitler here, because he used the swastika, he studied esoteric knowledge a great deal, and of course it led to quite a catastrophic situation in Second World War. And because of the use of the swastika, which is a sacred symbol that is also the symbol of Krishna, the swastika, symbol of Vishnu, the symbol of self-knowledge. So if this knowledge is held in the intellect of someone who is motivated by tamasic motivations, it will cause a lot of damage. And I think that this caveat in this verse is very much connected with that. For us, it is always said, you know, you must be careful who you give this knowledge to. It has to be received by someone who is pure, pure in heart.
Now that you put it that way, Sister Denise, it's a very dire warning. Let us now go to verse 68. He who shall teach the supreme secret to my worshippers, having performed the highest devotion to me, shall come to me without doubt. And verse 69, and no one among men shall do more pleasing service to me, capital M, than he, and no other on earth shall be dearer to me. Again, appealing to the heart.
Yes, God is speaking to Arjuna within the chariot, and nobody knows what they're talking except Sanjay, who has the gift of clairaudience and clairvoyance. God wants this knowledge to be known to the right people, and somebody who is able to communicate it to that group of right people is doing God's work. So God is very happy about this. And anybody who helps God in this task, naturally he will say, this one is dear to me.
It's this is a very sweet aspect of the Bhagavad Gita, Sister Denise. It's very endearing. One can't help but if you read these two verses to feel close to God, because you feel the pull. And we spoke about magnet earlier, but God is also a magnet, isn't he?
Supreme magnet.
Yeah. Okay, I like particularly what is contained in verse 70, which reads, he who shall study this sacred dialogue of ours, sacred. By him I shall have been worshipped with the wisdom sacrifice, such is my conviction. This dialogue is sacred.
It is sacred because this is what's going on between God and the one who loves God. And it is through this knowledge that actually the force of evil is neutralized. So if you study it, then that is called the Gyan, the Gita Gyan Yagya, the sacrificial fire of the knowledge of the Gita. You have to sacrifice your body, you sacrifice your ego, you sacrifice everything about yourself that is materialistic. And through that, you gain mastery of the self. And when you have mastery of the self, the microcosmic mastery of the self, that cosmos of the soul and body, that qualifies you to be a ruler of the world. And so Raj Yoga is the yoga for sovereignty. Sovereignty, self-sovereignty, self-mastery. And then ultimately, you qualify as a leader in this world because everything about you is going to be followed by others. And in that way, the world becomes a world of dharma. And of course, it mentioned earlier in the earlier chapters that God comes to destroy adharma and to establish dharma, true religion or true activity, true behavior.
Sister Denise, the last two verses spoken by God reads as follows: even the man who hears it with faith and free from malice, he also, comma, liberated, comma, shall attain the happy worlds of those whose actions are pure. Has this been heard by you, Arjuna, with a concentrated mind? Have your ignorance and delusion been destroyed? This is the last two verses that is spoken by God, and then Arjuna replies thereafter. Do you want to take us through to the last two verses spoken by God?
Yes, it's very interesting to me that in verse 71 he says, you will be liberated and you will go to the world of happiness to those whose actions are pure. So this corresponds to the idea that your destination, your final destination, is not nirvana, but after that you will return to the world of happiness. That is, it's an earthly world which is constructed out of the actions, the pure actions of people who have learned to perform pure actions, which to me is the new cycle, the Satyuga, the golden age. And this has not been mentioned in any of the other parts of the Gita. So everything is to return to nirvana, to die in a correct way. And now, when you've understood all of this, this is going to take you to the next cycle. So to me, this is very interesting. And then the next verse, did you hear? Did you listen? Were you paying attention? Has your ignorance and delusion been destroyed? And so this is the last question that God is asking to Arjuna. And the conclusion, as you rightly say, the conclusion of what God is saying to humanity. Did you understand?
And Sister Denise, I see then that Arjuna finds his voice and he replies, my delusion is destroyed and I have gained wisdom through your grace, Krishna. My doubts are gone. I shall do as you command. We see that Arjuna has come full circle. The rest of the book is Sanjay's input. And Sister Denise, what comes to mind as well is the importance of verse 78, where it reads, wherever there is Krishna, Lord of Yoga, wherever there is Arjuna, the archer, there will surely be splendor, victory, wealth, and righteousness. This is my conviction. That last stanza was spoken by Sanjay.
Arjuna is saying the very famous expression, Nashto Moha Smriti Labta, my attachment has been destroyed, the attachment to the illusion. And I've understood. And so I will obey. I will follow your command. I will smite the enemy. that's the end of the interaction between Krishna and Arjuna, and we're back to Sanjay, who has been amazed by his extraordinary gift of being able to eavesdrop on this conversation. So his conclusion is that, yes, I saw God, it was God, he was talking to the highest human, and so there will surely be splendor, victory, wealth, righteousness. This is my conviction. So it is a very powerful message at the very last stanzas of the book that yes, God did come, he did speak, and what he says was true. Let us try to understand it.
Denise, thank you so much, so very, very much. There you go. We have now reached the end of chapter 18 of the Bhagavad Gita. There are a few more episodes that Sister Denise and I will be taking up as far as the Bhagavad Gita is concerned. Thank you so much for being with us, and see you next time. Goodbye.